meeny, miny, mo, catching Amelia's fish fry by its toe, or MP3 as the case may be. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this here electronic engineering podcast brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. All right, folks, we're going to start things off with a little news you may have missed. But first, I have a little bit of a confession. I have absolutely no sense of direction. Ask any one of my friends, family, or especially my coworkers. Hey, Amelia, weren't you supposed to be at the restaurant an hour ago? What happened? Oh, you got lost. Again. So yes, I've never really had a sense of direction. Even when I was a little kid and I would look up at the left and right hands above the blackboard, and I would think, shoot, which one is which again? Have you ever thought, why are humans so different from the rest of the animal pack in this area of life? I mean, if I was a salmon, I would never find my way back to the ocean. Wait, was that a right turn at the Sandy River or a left turn? Oh, shoot. Where is everybody else? So, yes, there is a reason for this, actually. A fair amount of the animal kingdom, including honeybees, turtles, whales, birds, bats, and yes, even salmon, use the geomagnetic field to help them navigate. It's actually called magnetoreception. And it's actually a sense that these creatures have that allows them to detect a magnetic field in order to perceive direction, altitude, or location. This sense is actually used by a wide range of animals for orientation and navigation, and as a method to create mental regional maps of sorts. So, do humans have this magnetoreception? Now, I'm talking normal humans here, not ones with names like Professor X, Cyclops, or Wolverine. No, that's a X-Men joke? Yeah, okay, moving on. Well, maybe we non-mutant superhero humans have this ability and we never knew it. So, a team of researchers from Caltech and the University of Tokyo, through a series of unique research trials, found out that yes, human brain waves do respond to controlled changes in Earth strength magnetic fields. So how exactly did they test this? Okay, so this team first built an isolated radio frequency shielded chamber, and 34 human participants from a wide range of ages and ethnicities sat in that chamber in complete darkness and utter silence for an entire hour. During that hour, the research team silently moved the magnetic field around the chamber and then measured the participants' brain waves with 64 different electrodes positioned on their heads. So, some of the participants in this study had nothing much of interest happen to them. They just sat alone in the dark for an hour. Big whoop. Okay, but a whole bunch of other people involved in this study experienced something quite different. Their brain waves actually correlated with the changes in the magnetic field around them. Okay, let's back up a little bit. To truly understand this study, you need to know a little bit about alpha brain activity. So, this kind of brain rhythm activity is actually a measure of whether the brain is being actively engaged or resting in an autopilot mode. When you're riding in that autopilot mode, your alpha power is higher. But if something catches your attention, unconsciously or consciously, your alpha power drops. Your alpha power can also drop with input from other stimuli, like vision, hearing, and touch. And those stimuli actually cause a big, abrupt drop in the amplitude of those alpha brainwaves. Okay, so there is only a small range where we can accurately measure alpha rhythm in the brain. It's between 8 and 14 hertz. All right, so back to the study. Some of the participants in this study showed that their alpha power actually began to drop from baseline levels immediately after magnetic stimulation, and then decreased as much as 60% over several hundred milliseconds, and then recovered to a baseline level a few seconds after that stimulus. Now, even further, researchers working on this study showed, with further tests, the brains of these participants seemed to be actively processing magnetic information and rejecting signals that were not natural. Okay, so as an example of this, and this is kind of cool, when the vertical component of the magnetic field was pointing upward during the experiments, there were actually no changes in the participant brain waves. Why? Because the magnetic field normally points down in the northern hemisphere, it seems that those brains were simply ignoring those signals as wrong. So simply, some of the participants in this study felt, according to their brain that is, these shifts in magnetic rotations. Just like when they would feel their heads shake or they would turn to look at something interesting in their periphery. One of the main researchers in this project put it quite well. He said, given the known presence of highly evolved geomagnetic navigation systems in species across the animal kingdom, it is perhaps not surprising that we might retain at least some functioning neural components, especially given the nomadic hunter-gatherer lifestyle of our not-too-distant ancestors. The full extent of this inheritance remains to be discovered. Cool, right? So if you want more information about the challenges experienced by this team of researchers and what exactly magnetoreception is all about, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, including a super geeky white paper called Transduction of the Geomagnetic Field as Evidenced from Alpha Band Activity in the Human Brain. Cool, right? Okay, so from alpha waves to Moore's Law, yep, that's how we roll on Fish Fry. Please welcome Matthew Burns from Samtech. Today, Matthew and I are chatting about high-speed fabrics, how we can prepare for the next wave of embedded computing, and why these newfangled high-speed fabrics are going to make our design lives harder, not easier. Let's go. Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for joining me.
Amelia, it's great to be with you again.
Okay, so first off, give my audience a quick recap on what Samtech is all about.
Samtech is the service leader within the interconnect industry. In addition to our world-class service, we're also known for our high-performance interconnect solutions. So whether that's backplane, board-to-board, cable, optical, we are one of the market leaders when it comes to high-performance interconnect.
Okay, so we are talking about preparing for the next wave of high-speed fabrics and embedded computing today. So what kinds of trends are you seeing pushing this wave, Matt?
From an interconnect standpoint, Amelia, we see three areas, and it's not anything that's going to shock you or your listeners. One thing is high pin count, right? Silicon ICs, whether they're FPGAs, GPUs, MCUs, whatever, ASICs, whatever the case may be, faster data rates, more channels, more pins. So OEMs are forced to route these signals throughout their system. So especially on board-to-board interconnect, we see an increasing number of pins. So we have a variety of solutions we've come out with that are available and are coming out with that have higher and higher pin counts. In addition to the pin count, obviously ICs are getting smaller. You know, the latest size node I've seen from the semiconductors is 7 nanometer, 5 nanometers is on the roadmaps. So we have to make our connectors denser and denser.
Right.
So some of our solutions, you know, we're getting into dozens and dozens of interconnects per square inch. So whether that's a mezzanine style connector or a backplane style connector or whatever the case may be. And then lastly, I mentioned earlier, high-speed performance, right? That the cutting edge of silicon right now in early 2019 is 112G PAM4. We're working with several interconnect partners that have next-gen prototype interconnect, next-gen prototype silicon solutions. We're selling the connectors. We're not selling the ICs, obviously. Right. But, you know, they're talking to the customers. We're talking to the customers, both talking to the same folks. And our end market OEM customers don't just want a piece of silicon or just a connector that can operate at these speeds. I mean, they want an entire ecosystem that works there. So we're working with the IC manufacturers to marry backplane solutions, board-to-board solutions, front panel solutions, and cable solutions that operate these higher speeds. So again, the biggest trends we're seeing, high pin counts, increased density, and increased speed.
Okay, so we've got Moore's Law, we've got the von Neumann bottleneck. What are the technologies that you're seeing really help solve these problems?
Emilio, I always love talking to you because you always give me good questions to think deeply about. So there's a lot of areas that we could talk about, but one thing maybe I can just expand upon that we see that's really driving a lot of this is increased SI optimization. Samtec has long been a leader in SI optimization, offering SI support for our customers, whether it's tier one, tier two, or even some of the smaller customers. We're constantly being forced to innovate and to, you know, perform R&D efforts around SI. One of the things that's made our life easier is that the tools for modeling and simulating and analyzing the solutions have gotten better. You know, they take advantage of Moore's Law themselves and, you know, the cloud computing capabilities that are out there. So from a software standpoint, that makes design and SI work get better as time goes on. We've also continued to increase the amount of, not only the amount of engineers we have working on SI, but also the capabilities the team offer. And we've established multiple design centers focused purely on SI performance over the last couple years. We've increased SI support engineers globally. So we have resources in the three major areas of the world, the Americas, Europe, and in Asia. And we continue to expand our capabilities in terms of just SI know-how. We're active in a lot of the industry trade group, et cetera, et cetera. And that, having all those capabilities is really enabling us to meet the demand that our customers are asking.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about SI. Now, I can imagine that these faster fabrics are making our design lives a little harder, right?
Yes, in multiple ways. One of the things that we find a challenge is as data rates get faster, the trace lengths that you can pass these signals through on typical PCB materials get shorter. A good example is if you're trying to run 56G PAM4 on FR408, you're limited to maybe an inch or two without having to add a retimer or a CDR or whatever. One of the ways to get around that, obviously, you can use more exotic laminate materials such as Megtron 6, Megtron 7, Tachyon, et cetera, et cetera. But you still only have a finite length of PCB trace. So one of the things that we're seeing is not only are we helping customers to optimize their SI performance on the PCB, you know, looking at the stack up, looking at the breakout, how you route the signals outside of the connectors, you know, do you want to actually use the CDRs or the retimers? A lot of customers still do, but other customers also want to get out of the PCB into ultra-low skew, low-noise TwinX cable. Mm-hmm. So instead of going through the PCB, they go over the PCB. Samtec is a leader in that space as well.
All right, Matt, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now you have one meal left on planet Earth. That's all you're going to be able to eat for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Sushi. I like fresh sushi. Thankfully, I've been very fortunate. I love my wife. We've been married 16 years. I've been spoiled because she loves to cook and I love to eat. She's not a sushi fan. That's okay. We'll work on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could eat sushi for the rest of my life. That's not the question I expected from you, but that's a great question.
Well, sushi's actually one of my answers as well. So there we go. Awesome. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Matt.
Thanks, Amelia. We really appreciate the time today. Thanks.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. Don't forget our Twitter handle is EEJournalTFM. And if LinkedIn is more your thing, I understand, totally. You can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by me, of course. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I especially like pinball and basketball.